So this is going to be very informal. I just collected a few topics and questions that people sent me the previous days, but please feel free to add more if you wish. So as Leo was suggesting on Slack, maybe this session should not call alternative theories. It looks a bit weird. Theories beyond GR would be better. And the focus that I try to give here is mostly about Emery's, or anyway, small mass ratio limit. So maybe I'll spend really 1 minute going through what I believe might be interesting topics, and then the discussion is open to anyone. So in my perspective, maybe the one of the most important points is how the bounds on beyond GR effects can in principle deteriorate if we consider real orbits, which means non-equatorial, eccentric, etc. And the reason is that we have seen talks by Susanna Bersanti, Nicola Franchini, and others before showing interesting constraints in principle, for example, on the scar charge, but there are also other papers. And so far, I've been seeing mostly simplified papers, analysis on quasi-circular orbits, maybe eccentric orbits, but still equatorial. So the parameter space is much simpler than what it should be in reality. And I would like to see a real parameter estimation and see, for example, if, I don't know, the scalar charge correlates with some other orbital parameters, and therefore the bounds that one can get can deteriorate. And overall, I think this poses the question, how accurate shall beyond GR Emery's waveform should be compared to, say, to GR waveforms? Shall we go to higher post-diapadic order or not? Maybe current approximations are sufficient at least to detect some smoking gun effects or not? And I think that this first question is also related with the third one here, which I think is a big missing part in the literature, namely whether it's worth computing self-force effect beyond GR, both say to detect some interesting physics, or maybe they can just be useful to build more accurate models for intermediate mass ratio spiral templates beyond GR, trying to find almost analytical waveform for this beyond GR, similar to what has been done in general activity. Other interesting questions maybe people want to comment about are which kind of smoking guns are we after, dipolar radiation, resonances, chaotic motion, maybe a point that I would like to make is that we have been seeing something related with the quadrupolar deformation of the Kerr metric, but in fact the multipolar structure of the primary in an Emery's can be much more complex than Kerr. The primary can be non-equatorially symmetric, might not even be axially symmetric, and this creates a lot of new multiple moments that would be interesting to see whether we can constrain or not. And then there are other questions. Maybe I will just leave it here for people to discuss. One point that I received from many people, and therefore it's worth some comment, is about the degeneracy between possible environmental effects of waveform systematics. So put it in another way, suppose that we detect an Emery and something anomalous come up. How confident should we be to claim that Einstein was wrong, or should we first look at some very specific other effect within GR that can have a similar impact? Let me maybe just close by saying, in the recorded talk before, a few talks ago, there was this claim that Lisa is gonna see thousands of Emery's. It looked a bit too high to me, because the event rates that I've seen, sometimes they go from one to, I don't know, dozens, and one is critically close to zero to me within the errors of astrophysical rates. So I don't know, I also want to hear your opinion about that. How many of these events, especially those that are important for test OGR, so very bright one, are we going to see? Okay, so I don't think I can see the chat while sharing, but so please, if you, and not also not if you are raising hands, so yeah, if you want to talk, please.
Yeah, so I'm just going to say that this I think is a very nice summary, and I would extremely stress point number five, right? So it ties with the discussion on Friday about environmental effects. If we see something wrong, if our parameter estimates have too large residuals, what do we do? Because I think there will be many, many things to consider, right?
Yeah, I generically agree. Yes, can you a bit elaborate on this? So sorry, I cannot see who you are, but yeah, if you can elaborate a bit on, for example, which kind of environmental effect are you thinking of?
So I am thinking about resonances. So for instance, let's say we see a resonance, right? And there are many things which can cause a resonance that can be like, you know, for instance, there will be talks here about tidal resonances, which cause non-axisymmetric resonances. You can have just a strong tidal field, which cause R theta resonances. But you can also have beyond GR effects, which cause resonances, right? So let's see, we find a resonance, and it does not fit, you know, let's say, a vanilla emery in the sense of like a pure curve, pure spinning secondary. So what do we do, right? How do we proceed from there?
Yeah, so I'm raising my hand, but I think you cannot see it, right?
Yes, please, Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think we'll ever convince ourselves that by one event, one single event that you see a deviation. I mean, if you see a deviation in one single event, you will likely not convince yourself. I mean, this is true for emeries or any event, actually. If you see a deviation, it will be hard to convince ourselves that this is because of a beyond GR effect. Because I'm sure you can find either, I mean, you can probably find other ways to make that specific deviation that we might see. But then you will need to say, I mean, if you have, for example, some specific beyond GI effect that fits that perfectly well, it will also make predictions about deviations in other events and other, even, for example, if you see a deviation in Embry, I guess we'll have implications also for massive equal mass binaries, for example, or in some case it might have. So you will need to have something that, you know, that in a statistical way works in every single event that you have. Otherwise, otherwise you will always say it cannot be a beyond GR effect, I think.
Yes. Yeah, so Richard, if I can add, I totally agree with you, especially about the first part. Namely, that if we detect something anomalous, I mean, of course, we want to have a consistency theory or model that predicts that something anomalous should happen also on another source, right? I'm less convinced about the fact that if you detect something anomalous in emeries, you should also detect something anomalous in, say, comparable mass, supermassive black hole binaries. And the reason is that for many tests, OGR or exotic compact objects, emeries will really put, unbelievable constraints. For example, the quadruple moment can be constrained at a level that it will never be reached by supermassive binaries. Same thing, for example, Elisa Maggio this morning talked about the reflectivity. The reflectivity that one can hope to probe with emeries is orders of magnitude better than what LIGO will ever do in the future, or even LISA with comparable mass binaries. And therefore, changing source might not work, because maybe GR works very well for supermassive binaries just because the correction is small, and emeries would be the perfect source to to detect this event. But overall, I agree. I mean, one event might not be enough if we start seeing the same kind of anomaly in different sources, it would be better.
But even if it's the effects only in emeries, you will see more than one emery, and each with its own parameter. So the effect will be different because it depends on. So
yeah. Maybe not 1,000, but yeah. Okay. I saw that there are three raised hands.
Maybe I can add something to this discussion here. So I think there are two main sources of environmental effects that we know so far. The first source is due to accretion disk, the interaction with accreting gas. The other one is due to the tidal interaction, gravitation tidal interaction with a closed third body. So if you have an AGN disk, that will generate a lot of actual emeries, maybe even more than the traditional formation channels. But these emeries usually have very small eccentricity. So if you want to say, I want to test my GR, and I want to, I want to avoid accretion effects, maybe you will like to go to those emeries with significant eccentricities. And then the other tidal effect. So if you have a third body, the resonance that third body generates usually have non-zero azimuthal node number. So that's very different from those, for example, the one generated by cell force. So if you see, -2, -1, 2, this kind of resonance, that's not by cell force. That's probably due to a third body. But then you may ask whether this is generated by some beyond GR series. But if your beyond GR metric is spherically symmetric, then you will not get that as well. So unless you have some other modification to your spacetime with non-trivial phi dependence, then maybe you will also get that. So I think there are ways to test different beyond GR series and considering these signatures of these environmental effects. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Juan. This is interesting. Maybe just one follow-up comment on what you said about spherical symmetry and kind of deformations beyond GR. And this is related with this point I was making here. And just to clarify, what I had in mind is that there are different kind of solutions to alternative theories, or also boson stars, that can be deformed in a way similar to this, essentially, where you even break axis symmetry and you have a particular angular dependence. So you break the Noheir theorem of Kerr. You can break the Noheir theorem of Kerr in several ways. One is allowing for moments that should be zero for equatorial symmetric orbit like S2 or M3, so current quadrupole and mass octuple, or even breaking axial symmetry and having really a quadrupole moment tensor instead of having just one number. So this is a possibility that one should have in mind when testing the multipolar structure of the primer. There were other raised hands, please.
Yes, hi. I just want to mention, so I don't know much how things would influence for the Inspiro for the EMRIs, but in the ring down, if we happen to see higher overtones that doesn't agree, so this goes towards what we are seeing so far with this to the spectra too, that well, apparently there are strong indications that they are unstable. So this would be just a pure GR prediction that the overtones may be unstable. So local environments could really shift. Well, if everything is confirmed to be consistent as well, first, our first insight shows, but this would be still in GR, changes in the QNMs. So how this translates also for the inspirers and for the complete waveform, I don't know, but this is just a side comment.
Yeah, thanks. Maybe a follow-up comment on this is that, so as far as I can tell, overtones are particularly good for ring down tests when the mass ratio is close to unity, as in several LIGO and Virgo events. For LISA, it's unclear to me how many of these events we would see, just because the mass range is way larger. So it seems to me that it would be easier, say, to have a mass ratio, say even 1 to 2, that is not huge, but is already different from unity. And therefore, in that case, other angular modes, say L equal M equal 3, would be excited much more than the first overtones. Let aside the problem that, yes, extracting overtones depends also on the initial time that the ring down analysis started. So yeah, there are issues, but I agree with you.
I can see the data analysis part being very, very challenging in this aspect. I can really see. I mean, well, either.
Yeah, yeah, but the instability.
This is a yeah.
Thanks. Other comments, feedback, questions?
I think Harold had his hand up before I raised mine.
Go ahead. I don't see I can just see the.
Yeah, I've got several thoughts on this whole set of questions, which is really interesting. The one that occurred last to me is seeing those deformed egg-shaped black holes with all these extra multiple moments. I was wondering whether it would actually still be able to detect emeries around such objects, or whether the waveforms are just too different and wouldn't be triggering the matched filtering. If we can't even see them, then that would be easy in the sense that we wouldn't be able to detect a deviation from GR that strong. One thing that somebody pointed out is the deviation or the fact that we will hopefully be seeing multiple distinct events. And that can very well rule out what's going on in the local environment if the second event comes from a totally different galaxy. But that still leaves questions like waveform systematics left over. Do we really see some small signal of non-GR, or should we rather look towards the second order cell force folks, whether they have mistakes somewhere deep inside their quite complicated calculation, for instance? And the only thing that helps there, I believe, is a lot of redundancy in the calculations. I begin trusting calculations of that complexity. Same is true for numerical relativity, if we have multiple venues that lead to consistent results. Either multiple groups computing the same stuff with different gauges or different approaches, or agreement with numerical relativity or with other analytical approaches. But it's really essential to have redundancy.
Thanks, Harald. So maybe if I can sort of reformulate or rephrase your first part, the first part of your comment. It looks like it's a sort of short blunder problem, in the sense that on the one end, we want to have, well, I mean, those testing GR, some beyond GR effect, and the effect should be large enough. But if it is too large, maybe it would spoil detection completely in this case. On the other end, if it becomes too small, I agree that, I mean, even if you detect something, there will be dozens of other reasons that you should check first. Second order cell forces, for sure, one of them, but also others. So maybe there is a sort of sweet spot between super large effects that maybe will spoil detection completely and too small ones. In some cases, the sweet spot is pretty large, I would say, because, for example, the multipolar structure I was mentioning before, is not going to be a huge effect because typically these deformations away from care are sort of small, but they can be sufficiently large to give you a decent correction that might not be misunderstood by, say, second order force and wave force systematics. Another example are this dipolar radiation that we talked about before. That is a sort of big effect that will introduce other dissipative channels. It looks like too big to be misunderstood with wave force systematics. And I think it's a very promising way to put strong constraint on the charge.
So I think I have my hand up, and at this point I've accumulated several comments. So let me think if I can say them all. On the point of the black hole ring down thing from Rodrigo, I just wanted to point out that emrys are not the promising place to see many modes of ring down. That's going to be supermassive black hole mergers of comparable mass or within a few orders of magnitude mass black holes. Those will be extremely loud. Those are great places to test that kind of idea, Rodrigo. But I think for the emry, that last little merger ring down is a pathetic little few cycles on top of the 10,000 cycles. So it's probably not.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know how important that's going to be. Then my other comments, I think I had two comments. One was perhaps one way to discern the difference between environmental effects and effects of non-GR theories. Many non-GR theories, I would imagine, give extra structure, multipole structure to the black hole. Those would have a certain decay with radius. And so you might expect the effect to grow more strongly as the inspiral proceeds, whereas imagine just immersing the supermassive black hole in a big tidal field, that effect might be relatively constant across the whole inspiral. And so these things will be very hard to distinguish from each other in noisy data and real data, but it could be that by seeing, in some sense, the post-Newtonian order or the radial order at which these effects come in, you might be able to distinguish the difference between a black hole, which has weird multipoles, and an environment, which is messing with the black hole. My last tiny little thing just to say is maybe for Lisa, we need to think not just about the way we've been studying deviations from GR for LIGO, which is to say small deviations we try to pick up from a detected waveform, but think even more about making new searches, right? Searching for deviations which are large enough that you dephase by one cycle in 10,000, and then that may require an entirely different search.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Related to your first comment, I totally agree. I mean, I thought we were talking about ring down from supermassive black holes. Maybe an extra comment related to this and constraint, I mean, how to compare constraints from different sources with LISA. If you want, for example, to put a constraint on the reflectivity of your central outlet, with supermassive binaries, you can either look at tidal heating, which is anyway smaller than for emrys, or look, say, the post-merger phase and see if you get some echoes because of the reflectivity. And even with the super large SNR that you expect for supermassive binaries in LISA, the constraints that you should get on the reflectivity are way, way worse than what you should get from emrys just by looking at the fact that there is no absorption at the horizon or a tiny absorption at the horizon instead of having really like a classical event horizon. So in this sense, I think that for many effects, emrys would be much better. Of course, it depends on the theory and the model. If you start having something that depends on the curvature, then it's more problematic, even in that case, for example, the charge of the secondary in an emery is, we have seen that can put constraints even in theories with higher curvature correction. So that is something, is related with my last comment here, that in some cases, the bounds maybe are competitive with LIGO and LIGO, and we should see which one is better, but yes. I've seen that there are other raised hands.
I think it was Martin, Leonardo, then Wojtek.
Yeah, so I just quickly wanted to respond to Aaron's, maybe you can distinguish multiple moment deformations, intrinsic multiple deformations from tidal multiple deformations by the radial profile effect. That may be true. But one thing that happens is that we say, oh, look, the leading effect is going to be a resonance. But the resonance for both these effects is going to be exactly in the same location. And you won't be able to distinguish, probably won't be able to distinguish those two effects purely on that resonance effect. You would have to see the sub-leading sort of conservative phase effects to be able to distinguish the two things. So this is one reason to be sort of careful about pointing to resonances as smoking guns of beyond GR effects.
Thanks, Martin. Leonardo Gualtieri just wrote me that he on Skype that he cannot raise his hand on Zoom. So if he's still around, and Leonardo, if you want to.
No, actually, I raised it.
Okay, good.
So yes, I wanted to say that about Emrys. So I think that it's true that even doing theory independent tests, I think that one can learn something from the study of specific theories. And one thing that we can learn is that in many theories, the background, so the metric of the supermassive black hole remain the same, but what changes is the dynamics. And so I think this is an indication that it may be an error to focus only in studying in the original program of mapping the black hole spacetime using Emery. So in focusing only in trying to understand if there are multiples or changes in the background, because there is the concrete possibility that in a theory beyond GR, the background doesn't change, but the dynamics is different. The dynamics of the mission, and then the orbit, and then the waveform. So looking for instance, scalar charges on other charges, or trying to understand the mechanism of the energy loss of the secondary body, I think may be even more important than trying to understand, or equally important than trying to understand the multipolar structure of the primary.
Yes, actually, Leonardo, I agree. And also, it might also happen that the same beyond GR correction that provide extra multipolar structure of the primary automatically also provides extra dissipative channels. So it's in reality, the two things are to disentangle, and many cases, the multipolar structure is subdominant with respect to the dissipative channel, both in terms of dissipative versus conservative effect, and also because it's in a theory, say, with higher correction, this subdominant by itself, yes.
So,
go ahead, please.
Sorry, so yeah, I just want to say this was a beautiful segue into what I was trying to say. So I totally agree with Martin and Leonardo on what they just said. I just wanted to say that perhaps thinking about the primary as having multiples deviating from curve may not be the best way of doing things, because the internal multipole is a far field quantity, whereas we are talking about the strong field. And for instance, if you have many non-curve spacetimes which have a different quadrupole from curve, even identical between themselves, then the geodesic behavior in these spacetimes may be very different. Especially in the strong field near the horizon, because often they have singularities on the horizon and so on. So, you know, this kind of multiple picture might not be the best way to kind of put these beyond GR effects into one bucket together. So that's one thing. And the second thing is this all, you know, has something to do with the history of the field, where there is this influential paper by Ryan, which actually relies on GR. So it uses Einstein equations, Einstein vacuum equations, and then from Einstein vacuum equations and near circular in spirals, it deduces that you can derive multipoles of the spacetime. But this is exactly that. But the point being is that you use GR and plug in a non-GR result, essentially, because, like, you know, GR by now, you know, this year we have these black hole stability theorems, even nonlinear ones. You use a non-GR result and plug it into GR, and then you say, I can constrain multiples, but you are using constraints which, you know, it's not quite consistent. So I think this whole, you know, internal multiple picture may be favorable to be changed completely. So that's...
Yeah, I agree with this comment. Yeah, also, I mean, along the same lines, Ryan's approach is based on a small V expansion of some invariant quantities and identifying the moments order by order in V over C. So this will break down eventually in Embry. So I totally agree. I mean, it's maybe a sloppy way to put it in terms of multiple moments. I have to say that, for example, for these metrics here for boson stars, we know the multiple structure, but also we know the full metric in a consistent theory. So in principle, we could compute geodesics on that background and not map them directly to the multipolar structure. I agree. Other questions, comments? If not, maybe this is a good moment to talk about, or maybe to postpone it to tomorrow. I think there is a discussion session tomorrow about the multipolar structure on the secondary. I think this is potentially interesting, and the reason is that compared to the primary, the secondary can really be expanded in multiple moments, right? In a sort of model-independent way. And for example, one interesting question could be, if the secondary is spinning, can we measure the spin and therefore test the Kerr bound? So is the spin smaller than unity or not? And this is very hard to do with the primary, because we need a model for a sort of super spinning Kerr metric, right? While for the secondary, it can be done in a sort of model independent way. The problem there is that even though the defacing introduced by secondary spin seems to be sort of large enough compared, say, to the standard 0.1 or 1 radiant threshold, it does not look measurable when you do a parameter estimation. I think there will be discussion tomorrow and the day after. And this also maybe brings me back to the first question. I would really like to know the opinion of experts here. Typically, what beyond GR people did was to compute the phasing, the mismatch, and compare them to some threshold. This is very simplistic. What I'm worried about is that, especially for small effects, there might be strong correlation that totally deteriorates the constraint, even just assuming, not even thinking about wave-force systematics and all of that, really intrinsic in the correlations. I would like to know your opinion. I think that Alvin Chua raised his hand, so please.
Yeah, so I think on that point, on your question, actually, I suspect the answer is it's always going to make things worse. So when you do real parameter estimation, it's always going to basically deteriorate your constraints. And I think, so there was this recent paper looking at the effect of secondary spin, for example. And even using Fisher, they found that the constraints were already pretty weak, right? So it can't be detected from a single source. So I suspect most of the environmental or beyond GR effects that you'll see will also be of similar strength. And also when you start doing real parameter estimation, the correlations with all the other parameters will come into play. And I suspect, you know, from a single source, these will be very weakly constrained. So I think that actually ties into Richard's point earlier. So basically you do need a population in order to really have a hope of, I think, detecting beyond GR or even environmental, to be honest. And then also I was actually about to ask, you know, like, so for question point three that you have on your slide, whether it's actually worth it for EMRIs. So because with the uncertainty in the event rates currently, so I don't know, actually. So what is the community thinking? Because is it actually worth it building all these models if we're not even sure that we might get more than a handful? So maybe I just wanted to focus more on, is it worth it? I don't actually know the answer or what the community thinks. So.
Yeah. So for your second question, I don't know the answer either, but I would like to hear your opinion. I mean, the opinion of everyone. The related to the first question, yes, the case I had in mind was precisely that paper. I mean, it was one of the co-authors about the secondary spin. And I mean, the story there is that we had a paper computing just the mismatch and the dephasing related to the secondary spin. The dephase was like 20 radians in optimistic case, and we thought, okay, this is a sort of large effect. But then we went on to compute the Fisher, and because of correlations, it's totally unmeasurable. And my worries here is not really, say, about Fisher versus more realistic parameter estimation, is that even in that case, we were considering equatorial quasi-circular orbits. So I can imagine that for a generic orbit, that is typically the case, the situation is way worse because there can be much more correlation. So I'm worried about this for essentially any Leon-GR effect that is not large enough to stand out from other things. See three hands raised. I don't know who's first.
Lior is next.
Thank you. Yeah. So yeah, on the question of dephasing versus Fisher. So first, I'm very happy that you people are moving away from dephasing Mitchmas calculation to full Fisher. And I think you learned the hard way with this calculation of the small spin how important it is to do it properly. And I never understood why people got too excited about dephasing calculation that shows a good promise. It teaches you nearly nothing. You know, you assume you know all the parameters of the system, which you don't. It's really a question of searching over a large parameter space. So you add another parameter and you want to ask if you can, you know, distinguish that parameter at the same time as also being able to measure all the other parameters. It's very important to do this properly. So that's a good test case, this calculation that you've done that illustrates that point. I hope that more people will move in that direction when they do these kind of calculations. I do want to also refer to question 3A. Is it worth it? So, you know, I've been sitting in this kind of discussions for almost 20 years now, and we have moved, but not a bit, I think. And I think we've gone in many circles in the meantime. And I think we are sort of jumping ahead of ourselves, perhaps, and trying to explore a huge range of possibilities. And it seems to me that we just have to have some patience and actually have a waveform at hand and then ask these questions. I mean, just to focus our minds, because the space of possibility is just too big and you can go on forever about this. Why don't we wait until we have waveforms? I mean, in the meantime, what we have to do, and I think what would be best to do, is to get the GR waveforms as accurately as we can. But I think all these questions will be answered only when we actually see something, and probably they will be answered in many different ways. You know, different people will have different papers giving different interpolations. Even with LIGO, it happens. You know,
Lior, I think we missed him.
Yeah, so, you cut out. Right.
Question disk.
Sorry. Lior, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now yes.
All right. Yeah, sorry, competing with my daughters on the internet here. So. Yeah,
they always win.
I don't know how much of this long rant went through, but the point is that, I think it's a natural, I mean, that's when it's going to become interesting, when you get something unusual in the data and then different people will, you know, advance their own interpretation of that. There's one thing you forgot there in the list and on number five, which is instrumental systematics. You know, we need to understand the instrument, the detector, the experiment very well to be able to start even asking those other questions. And we won't, you know, there's calibration errors and many other things that will have to be understood very well before we can ask, is Einstein wrong? So my point, I guess, is patience. And in due time, when we get the data, we'll come back to these questions and then answer them. The other point was that it's very good that we're moving away from dephasing mismatch calculations. I'm done. Thank you.
Thanks, Mac. It was really interesting. And I agree with many things you said. Maybe a follow-up question to everyone related with what Lior said about accuracy of GR waveforms. So I read many times that an accurate parameter estimation with Emrys requires the full first post-adiabatic waveform in place. But the secondary spin actually enters at that order, and it looks like less relevant than what one would have thought initially. So my question, I guess, is whether that is really, having the full first post-adiabatic waveform in GR relevant for even for test of GR, or less accuracy is enough, or maybe we should go to second order. I don't know.
So yeah, Martin can answer this kind of questions.
I guess one of the things I want to comment on what you said earlier is actually relevant for this, is that you somewhat intuitively said that moving to a more generic system will make all the degeneracies worse. While that is true, moving to a much more generic Emery. So if you move to a much more generic system, but still look at a spin-aligned quasi-circular system, yes, it will make it a lot worse. But if you're looking at an Emery that already has a lot more structure, all of extra structure in eccentricity and precession will actually also break a lot of the degeneracies and might make things better. Yeah, so in this sense, is the experience that you got from looking at a Fisher matrix analysis from spin-aligned quasi-circular in spirals may not be that instructive into how things work in reality.
Very good point. Other questions, comments?
I would maybe just add to Martin's comments, this will be exactly true, very close to the circular case, right? Because you are at the edge of the phase space, and there will simply be parts of the frequency space that are not allowed by GR, right? So if you see your Emery pass away from the boundaries of your phase space, then this will be a smoking gun of non-GR, basically.
I'm not sure how that related to what I just said, but yes.
Well,
I also didn't understand, sir.
So, the point is, if you are, at a near circular orbit, then suddenly you don't just have the azimuthal frequency, you have two other frequencies. So in some sense, you have two more coordinates in phase space, right? So you have two more pieces of information which are specific. And there will be combinations of these three frequencies, which you pass at point one and at point two, which are both simply not consistent with GR, right? In principle.
Okay, I guess Martin's comment was related to the fact that if you start having more generic, suppose that you have precession, then say the secondary spin is introducing extra information that can be used also to break degeneracy with other parameters that will behave differently. And maybe there is this degeneracy in aligned or anti-aligned equatorial, for anti-aligned equatorial orbits, but this can be broken in more generic situations. So I think it's something that one should look at. There were some other raised hands.
I think Jonathan.
Yeah, Jonathan was the first, I think.
All right, let's see if I can activate this. Come on, start. Okay. I just want to circle back to something. As Lior has pointed out, we really need to do full Fisher matrix and not just look at dephasing. And I've in the past been guilty of using dephasing as a metric, so I plead mea culpa there. I just want to point out that we, given that we need to be prepared for the possibility that we'll get lucky and that Lisa will see one or two really strong sources. So, we should assume detectability, whether by in dephasing or by a proper Fisher matrix, down to a signal to noise ratio of, based on what Lisa can see with the signal to noise ratio of 30. We need to be prepared for the possibility that we'll get lucky and Lisa will see a source signal to noise ratio 400. Sometime, and it would be great if we had waveforms that were good enough so that if we do get a really strong Lisa Emery, the science we can do isn't limited by the quality of our waveform calculations. So to the extent that we can, I think we should aim high in our accuracy goals, or aim low, I guess, to push the error as we possibly can so that this grand project's overall science return isn't limited by the quality of our theoretical analysis. I realize that's easier done, but it should be our goal.
Thanks, good point, yeah. So I think that Martin says raise hand, yeah.
Yeah, I see that the discussion is not is not running out of steam, but unfortunately the time is over. But we have a Slack channel devoted to this specific topic. So I think people can regroup there if they wish. And other than that, I think it's time to say goodbye for the day. And I would like to thank Paolo for having led this discussion. I think it was a very instructive, very stimulating discussion.
Thanks, my pleasure. Thanks, everyone.